You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week's bits. The best news nuggets from Breakfast and The Wire from this week.
Atamarie, Kohana Ross, Tokuinga, and welcome to this week's bits. This week, the Labour Party got a bit of a switch-up as Andrew Little resigned from his role as Labour Party leader and Jacinda Ardern got appointed leader and Calvin Davis deputy. The Green Party this week was still fighting with what was going on with Matiria Ture's announcement of benefit fraud 2 weeks ago. First up, political commentator David Slack spoke to 95BFM's India about the big switch from Andrew Little to Jacinda Ardern.
I don't think we're in familiar times anymore, and what you used to think was the right thing to do possibly isn't anymore. You know, this is a kind of a reality TV era, astonishingly fast 24/7 news cycle, which means that something that once upon a time would have seemed far too late can actually be quite enough with 6 or so weeks to go. So you've got that first. And then the second thing is, there is, you know, without doubt, a vast amount of possibility there for Jacinda Ardern to capitalise on young people who didn't vote last time and weren't thinking of voting. And there is a real possibility that she connects with people in a way that Andrew Little couldn't, nor David Shearer, nor Phil Goff, nor David Cunliffe. And that's the weird thing about politics. You can think that a party is absolutely screwed. You thought it about the National Party in the 2001 election. No, it was 2002. It was the one where Bill English took a terrible pasting, and you thought, how the hell do they come back from there? Well, look where they ended up, you know. You do have the further complication of the MMP system and the fact that you have the Greens and New Zealand First all fighting for that vote as well. That does make it harder. But there is no doubt that if you throw something new into play, all kinds of things change. And here's the other really crucial thing to consider. There's something about the way people vote that is a million miles away from making a rational, logical calculation. And this is the thing I have to keep banging into my... I've been a political speechwriter a long time now, and I keep writing speeches where I'm making a careful, reasoned argument for something, and then I remember. No, you don't... That's... You need that underneath. But actually, people have... They work... They respond to emotion. They respond to a sort of a visceral, human sense of things. And there's a really crucial thing, and that is people want to vote for what other they think everybody else is going to vote for. Now we've got this new possible prime minister who's young and relates to people, and she's a woman, and that, you know, we're quite good at electing women as prime minister, and I think that's got a real potential too.
Jacinda Ardern obviously is coming at a very difficult moment with, you know, Labour doing so poorly in the polls. She's also repeatedly said that she doesn't want the position. Do you think that it's true that she didn't want the position? How do you think she'll do if it is?
Yeah, I know she has said that, and I know she means it, but I also know that she's very capable, and she knows that if she's presented with a different set of circumstances, she can rise to it. She's one of the most capable people I've ever seen in politics. She's really well-informed about issues. She's really skillful at working out how to convey that to people, you know, getting real substance in there, but also making it comprehensible to people. And she's really good at organising people. You know, I've done various events with her where she's chairing the thing, and she is way more effective at making things hum along and get just what you need from people and then move on than many people I've ever seen. Now, that's a really crucial role for both a leader of a party, a leader of a coalition, and a leader of the country. And I reckon she could do it really bloody well.
Newly appointed Deputy Leader Calvin Davis then also had a little comment about this change.
Jacinda's just got such cut through with young people. She's got cut through with women. We've had cut through with Māori. And there's even New Zealand blokes. And, you know, so I think we've got a really good balance. I just am so positive about the future direction of the Labour Party. And, you know, everyone says, oh, look, you've only got 7 weeks. And I go, great, it's better than 6 weeks. You know, we're we're just really keen to get in there and do the business for everybody and turn things around. And, you know, for those people on the ground who just aren't really feeling the love that they should be from this government.
But not enough. 48 hours after Jacinda Ardern got appointed as the new Labour leader, she got asked questions of if she was planning to have children anytime soon. Jacinda hit back, saying that it was completely inappropriate to ask such questions in 2017.
For other women, it is totally unacceptable in 2017 to say that women should have to answer that question in the workplace.
But this is my
point.
That is
unacceptable. No, it is unacceptable in 2017. It is a woman's decision about when they choose to have children. It should not predetermine whether or not they are given a job or have job opportunities.
What people are doing.
News director Shemina Smith spoke to Catherine Ravenswood from AUT's Gender and Diversity Research Group about the gendered question line and how prevalent it is in women's experiences in the workplace.
So I think it's highly inappropriate what those comments are doing, using our kind of outdated 20th century ideas around women's key role being to look after children and stay in the home. Those comments haven't caught up with the fact that women are successfully having children and working, and that some women actually choose not to have children anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that, well, this morning on the AM show, sports presenter Mark Richardson, he was arguing that employers, and in this case the New Zealand public, they need to know if women are planning on having babies or not, because employers are required to provide paid parental leave. So he's saying that employers need to know this information so that they can make informed decisions or not. Do you think this is a valid argument to needing to know this information?
No, I don't, and I've seen some of the responding comments from the Human Rights Commission. I mean, we're talking, there's a number of levels we can address that. All of us have employment rights, which actually include paid parental leave and unpaid parental leave as well. And actually, both the mother and her partner, which could be a man or a woman, are entitled to take that leave. So I guess if you are saying, look, you're already employed here and we're an inclusive workplace, we'd like to, you know, what are your plans? How can we support you? Then maybe you could get away with that. But if the voter is the public and the employer, then we can't use that as an employment screening process and at all. That's discrimination. And, I mean, was Andrew Little asked this? Was Bill English asked that when they took over their leader positions? I mean, what we're seeing is an assumption that women will want to have children and that this will interfere with work, and that actually paid work and business outcomes kind of trump any of our social responsibilities.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's the thing, is that men... male politicians are not asked the same questions, when actually the law doesn't sort of discriminate either way on whether, you know, women get more leave for becoming a parent than men. It's quite equal in terms of gender. So why then, therefore, are media questions so gendered?
Well, I guess, you know, if why are those media questions gendered? I think it comes down to our dominant cultural norms, which still very much hold to those gender stereotypes. And we also see in employment and in power that we still have men who are the people who hold the power overall. You know, they make up most of parliament, they make up most of boards, they make up most senior managers. They are the ones who are making decisions in our society. And I guess that perhaps this change is threatening for some of those men, that they see that if we allow more women in, if we change workplaces, we acknowledge that actually women are also intelligent and hardworking and eminently capable, that might perhaps be threatening some of their power base.
Mm. And so you, from the research that you've done, have you sort of found that women are commonly experienced being asked this question in a job interview perhaps?
My research hasn't looked at the job interview process, but a number of us in our research group have looked at women and careers, and women are constantly having to juggle a career choice versus how they care for children. And that comes down to a couple of key things. Census data from the last census shows that women overwhelmingly are shouldering the burden of unpaid care in our communities. So that's looking after children, it's looking after relatives, looking after neighbours, really keeping some of our social cohesion going. And at the same time, our workplace practices aren't changing a lot. So we still kind of, you know, we have this myth of a golden 1950s, I think, you know, where the man came home. And actually, the minimum wage when it was introduced was for a man who was supporting a household. But we have this idea that, you know, the man went out and worked and came home, and his wife stayed at home, looked after the children, and had everything all nice and ready. So he was totally devoted to work. But, you know, if we want to question that myth, we also had a lot more employment regulations that limited hours of work back then too. So what we're seeing is that we're just not changing what we expect people to do in the workplace or what we expect a career looks like. You know, we think you can only be successful if you work for 20, 30 years with no breaks at all, or you can only be successful in a permanent full-time position. And we really need to be questioning that, and we need to be thinking about what can we do. I mean, Jacinda could, if she wanted, any of our women MPs wanted to have children, do they have partners who could actually help out, or is there, you know, childcare in Parliament buildings, and why couldn't you bring children in to be breastfed? So there's a whole range of things that we should be looking at doing that actually question kind of the status quo.
Moving on to the Green Party now. 2 weeks ago, Matidi Atude announced she had committed benefit fraud to get more money to be able to raise her child. This week, she then met with the Ministry of Social Development regarding the consequences she would be facing. On Friday afternoon, though, the Green Party called a press conference to announce Matidia won't seek a ministerial position in a Labour Greens government, and she also won't resign.
I will not be resigning as the co-leader of the Green Party or as a Member of Parliament for the Green Party. What I do want to announce today is that I will not be seeking a ministerial position in a new Labour Green government. That's because I have been building a movement for compassionate welfare and for ending poverty in New Zealand. Change is coming, and I am proud to be part of leading that change at this election.
95BFM's Laura spoke to Andrew Geddes to unpack the legality issues and consequences Matidia and the Green Party may face with the issue.
Through Ture's own words, we can be pretty certain she falsely enrolled at an address she was not permitted to. Making such false enrolment applications is an offence under electoral law. Technically, it's punishable by up to 3 months of imprisonment. However, such prosecutions just don't really happen unless there's some deliberate effort to commit electoral fraud and actually affect the result in the election. These get dealt with by essentially a wag of the finger and a don't do it again type of message. So, yes, she has technically broken the law by what she did, but then again, she was a 23-year-old doing this some 24 years ago, and on the list of stupid things 23-year-olds can do, this probably ranks pretty low on the pecking order.
There's a lot of commentary at the minute saying that she should resign. Do you think this is grounds for that?
Well, I mean, that's a political judgment as to whether her behaviour builds on a narrative that at the time in her early 20s she saw herself as a little bit above the law. It's tied into the fact she's admitted that she broke the law in order to get more benefit than she was entitled to under the quite harsh regime in place at the time, but she defended that law breaking on the basis it was necessary for her child, that she had to do this in order to feed her child. The problem with this particular issue is that it appears she did it simply as a joke so that she could cast a vote for her best friend who was in the McGillicuddy Serious Party, which was a joke political party. You know, whether that reason for offending cuts the same sort of moral justification, it's just a little bit more difficult to agree with.
Politically, do you think this is going to affect the Greens and Labour and that relation that's going on?
The Labour Party, with Jacinda Ardern now in charge, has made it pretty clear that they're not really interested in talking about the Greens or what the Greens are doing. They're going to focus entirely on Labour and what Labour's up to. I don't think they're going to be supportive of Ture on this. They'll say, you know, she's made her bed, now she has to lie in it and she has to defend what she's doing. It won't hurt their post-election relationship in any way. You know, if they still need each other, they'll go into government together. But I think it probably will strengthen Labour's narrative that they are now the major opposition party. They're the fresh new approach. And anyone who's feeling a little uncertain about, you know, Turia and her past behaviour may be even more uncertain now and, you know, look to Labour again.
I mean, this is something that's happened 25 years ago. Do you think those kinds of actions should really be something that we make a judgment on?
I mean, the problem is that Maturia Ture, by raising her past as a beneficiary, has cast a light on her past, and so these sort of issues will come out. Having said that, it does prove what Turia's point is, which is that people who are on a benefit have their lives scrutinised much, much more harshly than others. And the only reason that we're talking about this, the only reason we're looking at this is because, you know, as a beneficiary, we feel we can judge and we can pry into people's lives that we just simply wouldn't with anyone else. And that, to me, personally, I find a little bit icky. Almost by doing this, we're proving Maturia Ture's point.
National Party's Jamie Lee Ross then spoke to us about Matidia's choice to not resign.
Look, I think this is an issue that the Greens and actually Labour have to work through. When you're a member of Parliament, you put yourself in a position where the standards are relatively high. And whilst I don't think anyone is going to say that what happened 20-odd years ago, and every member of Parliament should be perfect, no one's saying that, but what I think the public would be looking at is for her to be taking accountability and taking responsibility. And so making a decision that she's had, I guess, is a step in that direction. Their job is going to be to convince the public that the Labour Party and the Green Party have credibility around Maturia Ture and her leadership. In terms of us and the National Party, our job is just to continue to get on, govern, provide policies that we think will benefit New Zealand. Whatever situation or mess the Labour and Green Party are in, that's really for them to work out.
ACT leader David Seymour says Ture must resign as an MP immediately because of her admitted abuse of the welfare system in the 1990s and her abuse of voters' trust during the past weeks. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Well, David's free to express what he wants. I think the leadership of the Green Party is a question for the Greens to answer. But I think when you go to the public and you say that you want to have the trust and responsibility placed upon you by the public to be able to govern the country and spend taxpayer money and implement policies that you believe in, you have to go to the public and be able to convince them that you have the credibility and you have the standing to be able to do that. And that's a question the Greens and Labour, and I say the Greens and Labour because they're in this together. We know the Labour Party, based on the current electoral math, for them to be able to govern, they would need to have the Greens and New Zealand First there. So they're in this together. They need to work out their leadership and work out whether they believe that the public should place trust and confidence in Maturia Ture to be part of the government. Even if she's not a minister, she said she would stay as a co-leader of the Green Party, so she's right in there in the mix, and I don't think it actually changes very much today. It's still the same Green Party.
Was this week's Bits. To listen to the full interviews, visit 95bfm.com and check out the Bcasts.
That was a 95bfm podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.